Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Now, today, we're joined by a guest that I've wanted to get on the podcast for a little while now, Michael Shapiro of Sports Illustrated. How's it going today, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So now, Michael is the beat writer for the Rockets for Sports Illustrated. So he's a guy that I've wanted to get on this pod for a while now. And thankfully, we've got this really awkward stretch of days with no Rockets basketball, you know, no games for 5 days. Isn't that a little weird?
It's definitely strange. There's not going to be another home game for a little bit here at the Toyota Center. They will be in Atlanta on Wednesday. Russell Westbrook makes his return to Oklahoma City on Thursday. But yeah, that break after beating Philadelphia, I'm sure, was certainly welcomed by the Rockets. But for those of us who cover the team, it was kind of a strange experience.
Yeah, definitely a weird, you know, definitely a test in being able to come up with some creative content in a drought of Rockets games. Especially, you know, I don't envy, you know, writers who have to come up with content, because at least with podcasting, I can grab, you know, guests. And, you know, earlier today we did the Rockets Twitter, you know, town hall pod. And, you know, I've got you today. I'll have actually Adam Wexler on tomorrow's podcast. So I don't envy the position that this puts you in. Because even before this, it's basically it's one game over the course of 8 days, which is actually even more strange to think about.
Yeah, exactly. It's you got to kind of get creative, drum up some fun storylines. Luckily, there was practice and media availability today, so we got to discuss not only their win over Philadelphia, but Russell Westbrook's trip back to Oklahoma City. So no shortage of storylines as we turn into 2020.
Now, before we dive directly into the Rockets talk, wow, I'm all tongue-tied today. Interesting. That doesn't usually happen to me. Anyways, now, before we dive into the Rockets topics that I'd like to cover today with you, Michael, first things first, you know, tell the people a little bit about you. You know, where are you from? How did you find yourself here in Houston covering the team?
Yeah, so I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and then came down here to the University of Texas for college. I briefly worked in New York for about a year and a half with SI for their national site. Now I am down here in Houston writing about the Rockets, and I'm really, really enjoying myself thus far.
How do you like the city?
It's been fun, honestly. It's a pretty exciting city, great food city, I would say. One of the best in the country, which I really enjoy. So it's nice. A lot of open space here compared to New York, which is fun.
Okay, now, so do you have your own car? Are you Ubering around here? What's the deal there?
No, I definitely made sure to have a car out here.
Okay, so have you hit a Houston pothole yet?
You know, I don't think it's been too bad. I have noticed some of the roads. This can be a little iffy. You got to be careful.
Houston potholes are notorious. You will hit a pothole here in Houston one day and you will feel your soul leave your body. Mm. They are that severe. It's an epidemic.
Interesting. I've certainly experienced the bouts with Houston traffic. I try to keep that to a minimum, but potholes, we'll see. Hopefully it holds off.
Right. Okay. So diving into our Rockets coverage, first things first is what was your reaction to cornrow headband James Harden against the 76ers?
You know, I was kind of surprised. I didn't really notice it up until I was in my press seat and I saw him on the court. I think he was kind of wearing a hood for most of pregame, so people didn't really tell. I kind of thought it was a solid new look, change it up, and obviously it didn't hurt his performance. You know, triple-double, 44 points. You know, no one really asked him the reason for the hairstyle change, but I think it was a nice look and I think it was a welcome change for the Rockets to kind of spice things up.
I think he definitely just kind of wanted to mesh it with the kind of throwback jerseys, have that kind of classic look, you know, reminded a lot of people of Allen Iverson, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there were some comparisons made there. Now, keeping the train rolling with James Harden, you know, as far as an actual topic is concerned, where do you think we're at as far as, you know, earlier this season, I made a prediction that James would actually eclipse his 36 points per game metric that he set last season. And a lot of people said there's no way. And he's currently averaging, what, around, let's see, 38.4 points per game, which is insane to think about. And he's doing it on insane efficiency. So I guess my question is, do we think at this point, almost halfway through the season, that he's going to be able to maintain this level of play the rest of the season and then ideally into the postseason?
Well, I think in terms of the, you know, 38 points per game, I certainly do think he will eclipse his mark last season. I also think he will eclipse the non-Wilt Chamberlain record, which is 37.1 points of Michael Jordan in the 1980s, I think 86, 87. So in terms of scoring, you know, 38 and a half points per game throughout the year, I think that's entirely possible. He's just so efficient. He's been shooting an outrageous mark from three. I looked right here. In his last 12 games, he's shooting 49% from three, making 6.4 threes per game. You know, that efficiency from behind the arc might dip, but I think when he isn't shooting as well from three, he really makes a point to get to the line, start to rack up those free throws, which has been kind of dwindling in recent weeks. So it's a nice kind of leveling out for Harden. And yeah, I think he'll probably settle between maybe 39, that might be reaching it, but anywhere from 37 to 39 points per game this season.
So you definitely think he maintains this for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, perhaps in the playoffs, he'll see a lot more double teams, and it might be 31 points on fewer shots. I kind of think that's a prediction for the postseason. We can kind of save that conversation. But unless teams really start doubling with abandon, which a lot of teams seem reluctant to do, at least across a whole game, yeah, I think he'll probably finish around what he's at now, which is 38 points per game, set the non-Wilt record, and rip off one of the most impressive scoring seasons we've ever seen.
You know, it's a little crazy to think about the fact that we have a guy who's averaging 38.4 points per game, and he's currently got his team tied for the second best record in the Western Conference behind a powerhouse of a Lakers squad in the better of the two conferences, and he's not the runaway MVP. Now, I'm sure this is a conversation that you've seen, even though this is just your first year covering the Rockets, I'm sure this is a conversation that you've seen that's been hotly debated in previous years about the number of MVPs that James Harden should have, kind of where he stands usually in the MVP debates. What's your take on that as a media member? How do you feel about the whole debate of, you know, last year it was Giannis and Harden, and then previous year Harden finally got his MVP, which, you know, sort of felt like there's not really anybody else to give it to, and this is kind of a consolation MVP for the previous years where you maybe should have won it, but he comes up second every year. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting, and certainly I think if you ask certain Houston fans, they would say he should have won perhaps four of the last five MVPs, and I don't really think that's an outrageous assertion. I don't think I would certainly lean that way. But it is kind of absurd how we've taken him for granted, to your point, at least in the MVP race. You know, a guy averaging 38 points per game, you know, being the best scorer we've seen since Wilt Chamberlain, and the fact that he is not really considered, I think, in the number one or number two spot in most people's MVP conversations, I think is a little, I guess, concerning for the rhetoric surrounding James Harden, surrounding kind of the MVP race. It seems to be so much about narratives, and the fact that James Harden is a guy who is so consistently dominant. It can get kind of boring, you know, to people. And I think he will finish, you know, with another top three finish, but it won't be much consolation. I think the Rockets might have to grab the number one seed in the West for him to really win the MVP. Fair or unfair, I just kind of think that's the bar he set for himself.
You know, and I think you provide kind of a refreshing take on, you know, the whole MVP James Harden discussion, mainly because now here's the deal. You said you're from Denver. Mm-hmm. Were you a Nuggets fan? Are you a Nuggets fan?
I'm a very sad Knicks fan, but I certainly did enjoy those kind of mid-2000s Nuggets, I will say that.
Okay, so there we go. So you're not somebody who is, you know, born and raised and bleeds Rockets red and, you know, has this, you know, diehard fan, you know, bias that is sometimes hard. You know, I try my best on this podcast, even though I am a diehard Rockets fan at heart, you know, I have the ability, I think, to try and step back and take the Rockets glasses off, so to speak, and try to think, you know, logically about this team. And I try to provide a dash of realism and keep things up front. But over the past few years, you know, all the different MVPs, do you think there was a legitimate case there for Harden to have won more of them than he did?
You know, I think the two that people would point to, obviously that first Steph Curry MVP year was a year in which Harden kind of surpassed him in a lot of the counting stats, while Curry, you know, he rested a lot more minutes, probably posted historic efficiency. That one, I think, is a little less fair of a gripe from the Houston faithful, in my opinion. I think the Russell Westbrook year, probably looking back, is more of a fair debate, I think, from Houston fans. It's a tough thing because that year was just the year of Westbrook, I think, in a lot of people's minds. Yet when you kind of look past the names on the box score, certainly James Harden has a pretty significant case. So I'd say that 2016-17 year is probably James Harden's best case for another MVP. And really this year might be it. You know, the Bucks, I think, are going to roll to the number one seed in the East. I think Giannis is probably going to roll to another MVP award. If the Rockets can challenge for perhaps, you know, 55 plus wins, top two seed in the West, and Harden scores 38 points per game, I think it's kind of hard to keep him not number one on your ballot, I guess is my point.
Yeah, and they are on pace right now for, I believe, 56 wins. I think they're on a 56-win pace.
56-win pace, right.
Yeah, so this is very doable. And even Mike D'Antoni, I believe, earlier today at practice said that, you know, attaining the number one seed is possible. You know, they're currently 4 or 4.5 games back of the Lakers for the number one seed. And so it's definitely possible for them to achieve this season to, you know, maybe not chase the number one seed, but if it happens, you know, organically, you know, if other teams are going to do the Rockets favors, like the losses that mounted up over the weekend for not just the Clippers, but also for the Nuggets, and then also, who was it? Not the Jazz. It was another team.
Oh, the Mavericks.
The Mavericks. There we go. Yeah. So, you know, if other teams are going to do the Rockets favors and lose these games that they should have no business losing, then the Rockets definitely have a chance to, you know, make a push for the number one seed. And we've seen the Lakers struggle a little bit. They struggle against legitimate over 500 competition. I think they're like 9-7 against teams over 500. So that's not a great look for this Lakers team, especially as they head into a much more difficult part of their schedule.
Yeah, I think if you look outside the kind of MVP race for a second, and the fact that, you know, Harden might need to seize the number one seed with the Rockets here, I think if the Rockets can finish the Western Conference as the number two seed and be able to have that second round series at home, I think is really key. I think if you slip to 3-4 and have to go to Los Angeles for two separate series potentially in the Western Conference, I know that's looking ahead of ourselves a bit, but, you know, if you're a 3 seed, you have to go to the Clippers and then to the Lakers. If you're a 4 seed, you have to face the Lakers first. That's kind of a tough road. If you can be hosting one of those series, that's going to be really crucial looking towards their finals hopes.
Absolutely. Now, Michael and I have a bunch more Rockets topics that we're going to hit on, so don't turn us off. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just 1 second. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Right now, I'm being joined by Michael Shapiro, beat writer for Sports Illustrated, covering the Houston Rockets. Now, we've got some pretty exciting news. Is Russell Westbrook will actually be sitting out for the first time this season. He's going to be sitting out the first game of a back-to-back and playing in the second game of this back-to-back, which the Rockets play the Atlanta Hawks Wednesday night in Atlanta, and then they play the Oklahoma City Thunder the following evening in Oklahoma City. So it's Russell Westbrook's return game, his welcome back game to OKC after the trade that sent him to the Rockets in July. And I'm excited about this for two reasons. One, it gives the Rockets a chance to see what it would look like to have Westbrook resting on the first night of a back-to-back, which I've actually been championing this cause for a little while, that it actually makes sense from a logistics standpoint to, or just from a strategy standpoint, to rest him on the first night. That way you get a 100% Westbrook on the second night of a back-to-back, where maybe legs are a little bit more tired, players, you know, not playing their best game on the second night of a back-to-back, things of that nature. And then also, it's just going to be exciting as hell to see Westbrook play in OKC. What are your thoughts about this, Michael?
You know, first off, I think that is kind of an interesting theory. Rest him on the front end, right? I haven't really considered that. I guess it makes sense because then you could have James Harden at full strength in one game and Russell Westbrook at full strength in another. But moving on to kind of him in Oklahoma City, I think it will be a very emotionally charged game. I would bet the house proverbially that he will record a triple-double in Oklahoma City. I think that's an almost guarantee. You know, he talked to the media and he said some nice things about Oklahoma City today, though it seemed as though he mentioned multiple times how we'll discuss stuff like that post game. I think he's going to try to save what will definitely be an emotional night for the end and not really think about it much until tip off. Hopefully he can kind of go out there and play free. You might get some Westbrook kind of jacking some shots up early. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. You know, it's a regular season game. I think he's kind of deserved a kind of reckless Westbrook game, so to speak. But it'll be fun to see what he can do, and I'm sure it'll be a very, very emotional night in Oklahoma City and a big, big ovation for him.
You know, I was kind of, honestly, I was a little bit let down at the return of Chris Paul to Houston when Oklahoma City came here. I think it was like the fourth game of the season, maybe. And I know that Chris Paul wasn't a Houston lifer the same way that OKC was with Westbrook, or that Westbrook was with OKC, I should say. A lot of people thought that Westbrook would retire, a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and for good reason. He was there for his entire career, and then things just changed so rapidly this offseason with Paul George forcing himself out and all the way over to the Clippers, to where the Thunder just, they were forced to go into a rebuild, and it made sense to send Westbrook to Houston to pair with James Harden. But I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more of an emotional reaction from Chris coming back to Houston for the first time. I mean, he did achieve the most playoff success that he's ever had in his career with the Rockets. Again, being, you know, one hamstring away from what was arguably a championship with that 17-18 squad. So it will be kind of nice to see a return on the other end with Westbrook.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing with Chris. I think perhaps that it's an end. You know, you don't want to say on bad terms, but it certainly ended in a situation that was at least a touch acrimonious, in a situation that I don't think, you know, Chris was obviously unhappy with how the year ended. I'm sure James Harden was as well, and Mike D'Antoni. I don't think you'll see any kind of muted reaction from the Oklahoma City crowd, A, or for Russell Westbrook in general. You know, he's a guy who will obviously have his jersey hung in the rafters at, I think it's Chesapeake Energy Arena. They could even build a statue for him. I think he's deserved it. He's the franchise leader in points, assists, also turnovers, to be fair. But yeah, it was kind of a muted reaction when Chris Paul returned. Perhaps that's because it was the third game of the season and it didn't really end on a high note. You know, it's if the Rockets perhaps had dethroned the Warriors and made the finals in 2018, that would be a much bigger kind of ovation for him. But with Russell Westbrook, trust me, it will be a very, very interesting night and an entertaining night to watch in Oklahoma City.
So if they build a statue of Russell Westbrook, it's going to be one of two things, right? It'll either be Russ missing a dunk or it'll be Russ. It won't even be Russ. It'll just be a triple-double stat line, right?
Yeah, sure. It'll be like a 30, 10, and 10. There are some fun ones you could do. I always think of the Russell Westbrook, the alley-oop he caught with one hand, you know, from Kevin Durant, I think would be a fun one. I'm sure that Rockets fans haven't given much thought to that, but personally, I think it would be a cool idea.
That would be pretty neat. Now, keeping on with Russell Westbrook, you know, Over the, you know, past few weeks, you know, with the looming return of Eric Gordon, there was this kind of, it seemed like almost a consensus that upon Eric Gordon's return, he would take away some shots from Russell Westbrook, that his return would lead to Russ not being as much of the volume shooter that we've seen him be to this point in the season. And I kind of didn't buy into it. I know it's a small sample size, but Eric Gordon hasn't it's actually an extremely small sample size because it's just the Nuggets game and then the 76ers game, basically, because Russ did not play in the first game back against the Pelicans. And that's it, right? Three games back with Eric Gordon.
Yeah, so Eric Gordon has only played with Westbrook against Denver and against Philadelphia. That's right.
But I believe in both of those games, Gordon's shot attempts weren't necessarily outrageous, and Russ still shot over 20 times in each game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. Gordon, I will say, did get 13 shots against Philadelphia in the Rockets when he did go 3 of 13 from the field. And you do make a good point about Westbrook, that he has been a pretty high usage player over the past really month plus. He's a guy who is taking, let's see here, he's taking 23 field goal attempts a game in his last 20 games, which is, you know, not quite his Oklahoma City levels, but it is a significant share of the Rockets offense. I think that it will be natural once Eric Gordon kind of gets back into the fold more, gets back to full strength, that Westbrook will cede some shots. But I really don't think that a lot of Westbrook shot attempts is necessarily a bad thing for the Rockets if they're the right shots. It's been interesting in that earlier in the season, Russell Westbrook was kind of really trying to fit into Morey Ball and what the Rockets do, and he was limiting his mid-ranges, and he was trying to take a lot of catch-and-shoot threes. He's kind of abandoned that in recent weeks, but I would say with Russell Westbrook as a singular player, it was kind of for the better. You know, his increase in mid-range shots sometimes results in an increase in layups, too. He's been bypassing a lot of threes to just knife to the 10. I'm not really worried about his style of play, I guess is my point. And I think when Eric Gordon gets healthier, it'll become a more natural fit. And you might see a little bit of a dip in field goal attempts, but you won't see Russ, you know, completely demurring in the way that Chris Paul would, perhaps.
I like that take. I think, you know, I wasn't super on board with the thought that Eric Gordon would suddenly, you know, average 20 shots a game. He hasn't even broken 15 attempts a game as a Houston Rocket. Mm-hmm. I looked back because I was interested. You know, people are claiming that Westbrook needs to focus on being an elite playmaker versus an elite scorer or volume scorer. And so I went back and I looked at the numbers with Eric Gordon playing alongside Chris Paul, even that first year where he was coming off the bench, the sixth man for that 17-18 team, and then the following year where he was a starter for much of the season, and he never broke 15 shot attempts a game. So I'm sitting here thinking, alongside Chris Paul, who is the point god, who is an elite playmaker, if Gordon can't crack 20 attempts a game, now they are playing at an increased pace this year, so yeah, you can make the argument there's more shots to go around, but I just didn't buy into it, and so I guess I'm on this point where it's like a wait and see. You know, we need a larger sample size of them playing together, and maybe Gordon's shot attempts will go up. And I think that'd be more beneficial for the Rockets as a team.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be too concerned, I guess, about Eric Gordon kind of getting squeezed out of this offense. I still think he has a very significant role. I think the first game that you see a team really trap James Harden, by the way, is a game in which Eric Gordon will really have a chance to shine. He's kind of built for this. He can stretch the floor to 27 feet. He's really athletic, knifing down the lane. He can really make plays in space. I think it's a big addition for the Rockets. I think that Gordon is kind of guy who, he's very unselfish. He doesn't require a lot of maintenance. He you know, will catch and shoot a lot of threes. You don't really have to run any plays for him. He might see a little dip, you know, next to Russell Westbrook. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, but the more shots he gets, I think, is a healthy sign for the Rockets offense, because it means they're generating a lot of open threes, which I think is something they are obviously always trying to do.
Yeah, and with the ability for Gordon to be able to shoot his threes, you know, damn near 8 steps behind the three-point line or something at times, it's pretty nice to provide more spacing for Westbrook to operate and for the rest of the team to operate. Now, Michael and I have a few more topics that we want to get to in this final segment, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. And for this segment, Michael, we kind of touched on it in the last segment about the team and kind of what Eric Gordon provides as far as his role on this team. And a couple guys that I'm, at this point, I don't want to say, maybe concern is too strong of a word, but off the top of your head, without looking, so no cheating, eyes up here. If you had to guess at the three-point percentages for PJ Tucker and Daniel House over the last 10 games, what would you guess?
You know, Daniel is someone I think is probably the very low 30s, I would say. 30, 31 sounds about right. Perhaps I'm wrong. I feel like PJ has to be a little more solid, right? I would say he is. PJ costing 30%? Are either of them?
Daniel House is comfortably above 30. Well, maybe not comfortably above 30. He's sitting right at about 33%.
Okay.
PJ Tucker has dipped all the way down to 22% over the past 10 games.
Past my eye. Interesting. Okay.
Which is really rough to think about. And I kind of, you know, these guys aren't necessarily, they're not quite the X factor that Eric Gordon is or that he brings to the team. And I kind of crossed some stats and I was trying to make a, you know, trying to see if I could draw a correlation to, you know, wins and losses versus, you know, how many points PJ scores or how many threes he hits. And there's nothing clearly there. But this is a team where when you've got guys like PJ Tucker, like Daniel House, maybe some of the guys off the bench like Ben McLemore, Austin Rivers, when you've got those guys hitting their shots successfully, this team thrives. And my main concern is that PJ Tucker is only getting three, you know, a hair under 4 attempts a game from behind the arc. And I definitely firmly think he needs more attempts than that. I think in the past 2 games, he's only shot the ball once.
Yeah, he went 0-for-1 from the field, both against Philadelphia and Denver. I actually didn't notice that he has not made a three-pointer in 4 straight games. I will lend some caution, I think, to the PJ Tucker shooting concerns. I think a big thing is he is carrying such a defensive load for this team right now.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, Tucker playing some five, playing a lot of minutes, I think is a big thing. I think his age might be affecting his shot a little bit. I kind of think that he's a guy, if he gets enough reliable corner threes in the playoffs, which he will, I think he's just a guy I kind of trust. He's not a knockdown shooter, but I think the corner three he has made, it's such a specialty for him, that he'll be able to pull it off in the playoffs. You do make a good point in that this is a Rockets team that certainly has some volatility on the wing with its shooters, and that's a thing we've obviously seen in previous seasons, especially in the playoffs. That's just kind of something the Rockets have to deal with at this point, the way they play around James Harden, the way they've constructed this roster, especially now with Russell Westbrook, because the guy who's pretty much a non-shooter as well. You could have moments in the playoffs where these wings go on a long, significant stretch of, you know, cold spells in the playoffs that could really hurt this team. Then again, I think that Tucker is a guy you can rely on the playoffs. Perhaps they will make a small addition. But you are right in that it's a core you're not 1,000% comfortable with going into the playoffs. I'll agree with that.
You know, it really does boil down to the highs are really high for this team and the lows are so frustratingly low when the shots are not falling and when defenses are able to key in off of the non-shooters like Russell Westbrook, or when guys are not. I think I almost said Russell Westbrook in that, but it wasn't intentional. It was just me not enunciating properly. So I was not trying to call him Russell Westbrook, but sometimes he plays like that. So, you know, thankfully he's, you know, cut down on his 3-point shots a little bit, but I think we need to expect more from PJ Tucker and Daniel House as far as their consistency. Guys who were to start the season were both shooting well over 40%. Now, kind of moving past those two guys, and, you know, again, there's a bit of a concern there, but I'm with you. I think maybe the ship will right itself as far as their shooting, you know, as we move further into the season. But the next guy that I want to talk about is Isaiah Hartenstein. And do we put a lot of stock in him as the legitimate backup five to Clint Capella?
I think that it's kind of a two-pronged question, I would say. I would say in 2020, 2021, and future seasons that he can be a nice and serviceable backup five. I think that if you're rolling into the 2020 playoffs, when we get to April and May, it might be hard for him to stay on the floor. He's committing a lot of fouls. He is very talented. I will say that offensively. He's very nimble as a roller. He can really run like Clint Capella can. He seems to be, at least what we see in shoot around in practice, able to shoot from three. He doesn't quite have a
He hasn't a pulled green it out light. In a game yet, he which is not. Frustrating.
Yeah, and Mike said he does not have a green light yet. He said, because someone asked, because we saw him making threes in practice, said, no, he doesn't quite have it. He's like Clint. They really can't pull the trigger yet. That's kind of a sidetrack. I guess my point is, I don't know how much you can count on significant minutes from Isaiah Hartenstein in the postseason. He has the talent to prove me wrong, I would say, and be kind of a rotational center, but I think that the Rockets are really going to try to look to find a backup big, and if it's not even a true five, someone who can at least play up to the five with less responsibility than like PJ Tucker trying to do it, or a real small ball five trying to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Look, I love the Tuck wagon lineup as much as the next guy, but when you roll out a lineup of guys and nobody on the court is taller than 6'5 or 6'6, it's maddening when you're watching rebounds get grabbed by just the other team just simply because they're taller. When you know you've got another guy out there who's 6 inches taller than the tallest player for the Rockets and he's getting rebounds just because he doesn't even have to jump off the floor to snatch him out of the air, it's a little frustrating at times. Now, to kind of wrap this up, I basically want to get with you and think about what to you would be the best win and worst loss of this season.
That's interesting. I think when we're going to look at the worst loss, I think they had a really strange loss to Detroit earlier in the year. In mid-December, it was about a month ago. Detroit didn't have Blake Griffin for much of the game. The Rockets, you know, gave up a horde of points. I think they had the lead in the first quarter, gave up a horde of points late. They shot really, really poorly from the field. James Harden did score 39 points, but it was on 33 shots. But the likes of Bruce Brown and Tony Snell and Luke Kennard beating the Rockets at home is just one of those games that, you know, if the Rockets slide to the 3 seed, the 4 seed, the 5 seed here in the West, it's going to be one of those games they look back on. Another kind of honorable mention, of course, is the Dunkgate game, if you will, with the Spurs. I don't want to get into a review and replay conversation right now, I guess is my point, but blowing that lead and then having kind of the double whammy of that basket should have counted was certainly kind of a dispiriting loss. But I think the Detroit one, just in how strange it was that they couldn't beat a Blake Griffinless, who has had a poor year, but a Blake Griffinless Pistons team, that's truly a rough loss in my opinion. Yeah, for sure.
And then in your opinion, what would you say is the most impressive win that they've had so far?
You know, good on the Rockets. They bounced back just two games after losing to the Pistons, and they went to Los Angeles and they beat the Clippers 122-117. That was a great Westbrook performance. He had 40 points, 10 rebounds. He really closed the game late. Just incredible efficiency from James Harden, 28 points on 16 shots. The Clippers continued to send double teams at James Harden, but it was one of those games where the Rockets have shown and they will say that they kind of feel comfortable against the trap. They feel good beating the trap. That was a game where they really, really showcased it. I want Rockets Clippers in the postseason. I think that's kind of one of my I guess it was formerly Christmas wishes, New Year's resolution, what have you. Austin Rivers actually said a couple weeks ago that he thinks that could be the best rivalry in the NBA. A 7-game series of that could have ejections. I think it would be very fun. And I think it's a series in which the Rockets would be the underdog. Are certainly not completely overmatched in the matchup, at least when you look at the pairs of stars going head-to-head.
My heart wants Rockets-Clippers, but I don't know if my heart can take it, is the problem. Like, my brain says no, my heart says yes, because I know that I would be so emotionally invested in that series from the get-go. I don't care if I don't care if one of the teams falls and it's round one or round two or Western Conference Finals, whatever it may be. I definitely would love to, as a fan of basketball, I would love to see that series.
We could bring like Josh Smith back. We could do a whole host of things. It would be great.
Oh, it would be phenomenal. If Josh Smith isn't sitting there on the sidelines ready to bust out a comeback in favor of the Rockets to beat the Clippers, you know, just sub him in. He'll do a whole like WrestleMania, like come out of the tunnel and, you know, be the surprise Rockets player on the roster.
He could be a cheap addition, you know?
Now, are there any thoughts that you want to throw in here before we get you out of here today, Michael?
You know, I just think, you know, we're through 35 games here. This is a team that still has question marks with its depth, question marks with its defense. But I think you look at the ceiling of this team and you look at the level that James Harden is playing right now. I think it's a team that can certainly compete for the Western Conference crown. Another body or two could help. some more defensive focus and better seeding could help, certainly the Western Conference. But if you're a Rockets fan through 35 games here, you're looking at the team, I think it's an upgraded squad over last year. And I think it's a team that is truly in the conversation for the NBA Finals. So that's encouraging.
All right. And where can we find all of your content and everything that you've got going on?
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter at mshap2. And then you can read all of my Rockets work on si.com/NBA/Rockets.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thanks so much.
And with that, that's where we will leave things off for today. As always, thank you all so very much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Michael is on there at mshap2. And of course, the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website LockedOnRockets.com, and then our email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways for you to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our loyal listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. And I do read these reviews. I just want to let y'all know. If you've made it to this point in the podcast, if you haven't turned me off yet, if you actually sit through this final segment that usually sounds the exact same every podcast, because I do read off of a little bit of a script just to make sure I get this ending part right. I'm freelancing it right now. But basically, you know, I read these reviews and I appreciate it. Anybody who's taken the time to write a review and let me know that you appreciate the content that I'm putting out there and that the guests are putting out there for you to listen to, we appreciate that. And, you know, I share that with my guests and I share that with friends and family, and it means a lot to me. So thank you. If you've taken the time to write a review, I appreciate that. Now, after you write that review, if you subscribe to us, that's how you get the benefit of episodes that show up straight to your inbox before they publish to the previously mentioned social media outlets. And then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers, which allows us to keep this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For this Monday, January 6th afternoon, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.